Hey guys, we're back. Another episode of Smart Brand Marketing. Today with me, I have Ryan Folland. He is an expert in positioning your brand. Could be personal brand, could be company brand, I think any brand. Am I correct?
Yeah, well, the thing is that your business is you. And people forget that behind a brand of a company is the brand of the person who's running the company. And we too often forget that. We focus on positioning our business, but I argue that your business means nothing if no one knows who you are. And we are in a day and age where it's easier than ever to start a business. You give me $50 in a couple hours and I can slap up a website, get a mission statement going and make it look nice and fancy. But because that's the case, more than ever, people want to know who is behind that company. And that's why it's so important to position your brand in a way that people can find you, they understand, and you have a clear compass course in front of you so that people will actually want to do business with you.
You know, you come from a very different, I guess, business school than I do, right?
Okay.
Well, when you mentioned that, and I appreciate it because it's something I'm trying to learn too. Like the way I started all my businesses was the hustle mode, right? So I would sell things once I sold them. That's when I would actually put up a website. So like my SEO business, I sold SEO before I even had a website or a business card. And people were asking me for it. I'm like, well, yeah, that's true. I should have those up, you know. But my focus was on selling first, right? Because like you said, $50, you can slap up a mission statement and a website, but there's no customers.
Right. And I'm not saying that that's what you should do. I'm in the school of thought to definitely make sure that you're solving a problem and that you have customers before you get too far ahead of yourself. But the example of the fact that it is so easy to throw up a website and have a corporate presence is that people know that and they can look through it. So it is important to have more than just a website. It is important to have that person behind it. And, you know, we can talk today about a lot of different things, but at the through line, my argument is nobody cares what you or your company does. They care about the problem that you or your company solves. And a big part of positioning is being able to communicate the problem that you solve. And oftentimes people just get stuck on that or they think they know the answer and they move on. But it's a big reason why they don't get eventual traction or why everything falls off the rail.
Yeah, and I didn't make that assumption. I didn't say like, you know, you said just throw up a website. Like what my, I guess, challenge is with some of this, and this is maybe something you can help me answer, right? Because when I used to sell, I came from the sales background. And my sales were cold calling, which means door-to-door sales, business-to-business, like all types of stuff. So I was pretty much hitting up people either on the phone or in person, right?
Yeah.
And I realized pretty fast that there's a limit to how many people I can pitch per day, right? You know, maybe 60 or 70 at the most, especially in person. And, you know, that exponentially grows when you start marketing online. But when I was selling in person, I didn't really sell a personal brand. And I think a lot of people listening to it that are from that hustle mentality, they get that. Like, yeah, we try to sell our products. We try to figure out, you know, the problems, the pains. But transferring that online, and like you said, building a personal brand, that's a whole different ballgame, right? Like, I have not been very active on social media. I did not like it much. But I had a conversation with a buddy of mine. He was on a podcast before. He's a business coach, Tim Conley, the other day. And he's like, dude, social media is the internet now. You know, I don't know if you agree, but you can't just show up in Google and expect, you know, that to be your holy grail. Like, the social media is where you need to be.
Yeah, so I like to explain that I look at social media as an amplification tool. And a lot of people just look at it as a solution, but social media is not a solution, it's a tool. And if you've done any work with any type of tool, you realize that it takes effort to find the right tool. You've got to use the right wrench for the right socket that you're putting it on. And it's not just as simple as being on social media. And I think that's a big misperception, because the words even social media, I mean, that entails hundreds, if not thousands, of different types of social media platforms. I mean, there are so many different subsets. It's not just Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. There's thousands of even little pockets of social media platforms. So I think that it is a very bold and true statement that the new age internet is really what is on the internet, and that's all these different social groups and connections, people that are finding utility and entertainment in gathering and connecting and sharing stories and stuff. But when it comes to a personal brand, and I have a question for you back to your sales and in your face-to-face sales. Were you physically, like, you were actually knocking on doors, kind of going door to door?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay. So what would you wear?
It depends. If I was working for someone else's company, sometimes I would have, you know, either a bag or a uniform or something from them. But then when I was working for a little more higher end businesses in my own, like just either a suit or, you know, good, just something that looks professional, you know, but not okay. really so, anything that's branded.
No, that's fine. I want to kind of feel this out. So was your hair sloppy or was your hair made?
It was made. Like I was, okay. you know, I was dressed to impress.
Right. So whether you're online or offline, you were taking control over what people's perception were of you. And when you answer the door, the first glimpse and that first image is, who is this person in front of my door? Are they well-groomed? Are they friendly? Are they smiling? Are they intimidating? Do they look like they're going to rob me? You know, there's this initial first impression that happens in real life. The thing with online is that first impression happens in a lot of different doorways and a lot faster. So I would attribute the hustle of door to door. How do you dress? How do you show up to that door? That's very similar to your profile picture. Are you looking and being professional in your profile picture? Are you smiling? Are you friendly? Are you approachable? And so I think some of the basic sort of awareness of how you present yourself is really, at the end of the day, personal branding. And for people, especially when I'm speaking, I'll ask, you know, 1,000-person audience, and I'll say, raise your hand here if you have a personal brand. And honestly, maybe half of the audience raises their hand. And I try to convince them that whoever didn't raise your hand, you're wrong. I'm not trying to be mean, but every single person has a personal brand, whether you know it or not. The difference is that if you don't think you have a personal brand, it just means you're not taking control of the narrative. You're not putting forth the conscious effort to have influence over how you are being perceived. And that's just kind of a human trait. So I think that everyone has a brand. It's how people are describing you when you're not around. And the more you see the power in having your say in that, you get to then write part of the story. You get to write the ending, and you feel like you have a little bit more of control of where you're going.
Yeah, I'm writing that part down. That was powerful.
Now, I want to ask you another question here. I know you're the host, but I'm into this real quick, because
I
know there's a lot of people that know this door-to-door knocking. So did you choose the neighborhoods that you went to?
Not always. Sometimes companies would just tell you this is your zip code, even though you didn't want it, and just threw you in.
Okay, so let's say, if we're talking more about having control and owning your own business, when you were representing yourself and you're selling your own products, would you choose the areas that you would go into?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So now, would you go to apartment buildings or would you go to single family residences if you had the choice?
Apartment buildings.
Okay. And why is that?
Easier to knock on doors in one building, especially if it's raining or cold, than going from door to door. So sometimes,
right.
Yeah.
So let's use that as an analogy. You have more people centralized in one area that potentially could be your target market. And if you actually know about your target market, then it's very parallel to choosing whether or not you're going to spend more time on Facebook or Pinterest or LinkedIn. Think of that as an apartment building where everybody's gathered with similar interest or in a similar area. And if you were to approach a social media blitz and say, I'm just going to be on all platforms everywhere, then you're going to get frostbite in between going to the different houses. You're going to get tired. You're not going to have enough time to visit all these different areas or neighborhoods. And so it really is about the positioning. And it comes back to, who is your audience? Who is this target market? What problem do they have? And is your solution going to solve that problem. And so whether you're hustling door to door or you want to move to control your narrative online, there's a lot of thought process that goes into it so that classically you can pull the Abraham Lincoln and spend, you know, if you have an entire hour to chop down a tree, you spend 55 minutes sharpening your axe. And I think that the mistake when people make the jump to try to build a brand online is that they're doing the right things in the wrong order. And that is what initially limited my growth online. I had no idea what I was doing, but I knew I was doing the right stuff. I was writing, I was speaking, I was creating content, I was on all these platforms, but I had no traction. Like it was just crickets. And that's when I fortuitously met Leonard at a party, and I was like, help me. We met at Keith Ferrazzi's house, and he's a brilliant author. He wrote the book Never Eat Alone, and yep. He's famous for his parties. And so Leonard and I had independently been invited to the parties, and Keith is big on candor and vulnerability. So we all sat at these random tables with people that we didn't know, and the idea is don't tell people what's going right. Tell people what's going wrong. And so we introduce ourselves like, hey, I'm Ryan. What's going wrong is that I'm writing. I want to speak, but nobody puts me on their stages. I'm trying to figure out the social media thing, and I just can't figure it out. And everybody goes around, and Leonard says, well, my problem is that I have a lot to say. I do it online. I've got over 10 million reads. Everybody wants to talk to me, and I'm, you know, an expert on all these different publications, and I write for Inc. and blah, blah, blah. But I'm having a hard time when it comes to speaking in public, and I've just lost my girlfriend, and I'm kind of like, there's my problem.
Right.
So I went up and I'm like, speaking is my sharpest tool. So I said, hey, I can help you if you can help me. And we really complemented each other's strengths. And he showed me, look, you're doing the right stuff, but it's in the wrong order. And I think that's really important because you're probably doing the right stuff. I mean, people are smart. You know you need to create content. You know you need to be on certain platforms. You know you need to be consistent. But if you're not doing it in the right order, you're not going to see the traction that you could if you're well positioned initially. Sharpen that axe before you start cutting the tree.
So what's the right order? Because the challenge I'm having now, we've started a different business about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago. And it's to market online courses, right? And I had the clients. Once again, I hustled my way in. So I had the clients, have the case studies, have the success stories. But all the clients that I have are whales, right? And I don't know if you know anything about sales, but you know, you can starve chasing after the whales. You need the bread and butter. And the bread and butter is on the social media. And I've never been on social media much. And that's why I've been thinking, like, how to approach it. You know, how to get in front of them without being like a clown. Because I've seen a lot of guys on social media, you know, just doing stuff to be entertaining and get attention, which, yeah. You know, it's fine. But, you know, like, I just don't want to do that.
Okay, so I can solve that problem, all right? And the way that I would step you through this process, first, we would go through my 313 method. Mm-hmm. That is the first thing that I work with people. And once we have that figured out, we work through the 4 V's. Your four V's, your vision, voice, volume, and then validation. So we can do kind of like a little mini consulting session here if you want to, and your listeners can see and feel it out, see how it works. You can kind of follow that lead.
I think it'd be great because we do a lot of stuff like that on this show, and people appreciate it so much, right? They kind of – I use myself as a guinea pig, which you know, I used to okay. Never do that. But
right. But that's good. You're being vulnerable, and that makes you human, right? So that's lesson number one, be human, okay? So the 313 method is a process that helps you define your positioning. And it helps you do that by minimizing and reducing the amount of words that you say when you describe yourself. And the 3, 1, and 3 stand for the end result, which is explaining yourself in 3 sentences, 1 sentence, and then 3 words. So I'm going to ask you some questions, and I'm going to be sort of a tough game show host where if you don't go in the right direction, you'll probably hear a burnt and we'll try again. But this is tough love. It's like I'm going to reach across and slap you in the face, but then give you a hug. So it's tough love here, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to argue that nobody cares what you do. Let's get that straight. I don't care what you do. Your listeners don't care what you do. The only thing that we care about is the problem that you solve. We really care about it if we have the problem or if our family or our friends have the problem. So I would just want to get that clear. This is a baseline. So with that being said, I don't care what you do. I care about the problem that you solve. So your challenge, in one sentence, I want you to tell me the problem that you solve without telling me what you do. And before you answer, you are going to want to tell me what you do. And I need you to resist that. And you're still going to do it. I'm going to go, burn. Okay?
Okay, say it again.
Tell me the problem that you solve without telling me what you do. And try to keep it to a sentence. I mean, yeah. I'm not going to be crazy about that, but we want to eventually get there. So what is the problem that you solve?
Teachers not being able to get enough students into their courses.
Okay, good job, right? You didn't tell me what you do.
I wanted to.
I know you wanted to. So if I were to ask somebody, one of your listeners, on a scale of 1 to 10, well, first of all, I'd say, is that a problem? And I think, yes, I agree that that's a problem. On a scale of 1 to 10, the way that you said that, how big of a problem do you think that is?
Probably a 5. I could definitely work on a copy.
Okay. So have you ever had a paper cut?
Yeah.
What happens when you get a paper cut?
It hurts.
And?
For a long time.
Well, and it's not that long. I don't know what kind of paper you're using here, right? but what after a paper cut, there's really not much to do, right?
Yeah.
You maybe suck on it, you put your finger on it, and that's it. Now, what if instead of a paper cut, you actually cut your entire finger off and you start screaming and your finger does a little Adam's family and starts squiggling across the table and there's blood flying everywhere? What would happen at that if that was the case?
Yeah, that's painful.
It's painful, right? But what would actually happen? We would stop this recording. You would call 911. You would probably get a bag of ice. You'd get your little finger across the floor. You put it on there. You'd get in the car or get in an ambulance. You'd go. You'd get the finger sewn back on. You'd rest. You'd ice it. You'd take medication. And then hopefully you'd heal. So what is the difference between a paper cut and your finger being cut off?
The pain.
The pain, yes. But what I'm looking for is the action associated with what happens afterwards. Think about this.
Right.
If you tell me, oh my gosh, Ryan, I just got a paper cut. I'd be like, okay, Tom, deal with it. What do you want me to do? But if you literally go like, oh my gosh, Ryan, I just cut off my finger. I'd be like, oh my gosh, how can I help? What can I do? Do you want me to call 911? What's your address? The more severe a problem is, the more there is a want, a desire, a humanistic, a natural feeling to want to help, to do something. Like, what can I do? What can I do? What are the next steps? So when people describe the problem that they solve, like it's a paper cut, there's no wonder why people are like, okay, cool, congratulations. Like, there's nothing I can do about this. But if you take that problem and you turn it into something that when somebody hears it, it's a 10, they will actually be interested to know what you do to solve that. So take that same problem statement and let's add some blood to it. Like as a result of that, like where's the finger that's cut off? What's the ultimate result if that problem actually exists and people have it?
Well, they go broke, you know, especially right. Especially the ones that only move to the online course space. Yeah, they go broke.
So for those entrepreneurs who are focused on, you know, their livelihood through online classes but can't get students, will lose their business, be miserable, get divorced, blah, 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 whatever. Like there's all the blood and stuff like that, right? So the idea here is that defining the problem, but being able to describe it in a way that elicits some sort of reaction from people. Mm. So now I'm curious, what is your solution? And I'm asking you what your solution is, and can you say it in a sentence?
Without saying what I do.
No, this is what you do. We got past that. Like,
okay.
You solved the problem. You passed it, right? So there's your one sentence. Now, what is your solution? And can you keep it into one sentence?
Yeah, let me think. One sentence. I fix the sales funnels. And get you I fix the sales funnels, position the course properly, and get you in front of the right audience.
Okay. What is the difference between these two words, what and how? What's the difference between what and how? If I say what is what and what is how, what's the difference between those two words?
Well, what I usually tell people when they do courses is, you know, when you're doing webinars, tell them the what and then sell the how in the in the course itself. So, you know.
Okay, so what's the difference between the two?
So what is what you do, sometimes you also ask at the why, but then the how is how you actually do it. So it's a you know, it's different. It's
definitely okay, different. I like this. So I call this my iceberg theory. When somebody asks you what you do, they're actually asking you what you do. But the mistake people make is when I ask you what you do, most people will tell you how they do what they do. Mm-hmm. And you're basically spilling the beans. Because if you just tell me what you do, which you did, I help to deliver clients to people who have online courses and they're the right people at the right time, whatever. If I'm interested at all, I'm going to ask you, how does that work? And now you're like, I'm so glad you asked. What do you know about driving traffic to courses? And you can listen to them and then you can pick out what it is that is different about you and you can sell that. So this is good. You're on that, right? A lot of times entrepreneurs talk too much and they do that because they answer what questions with how answers.
Mm.
So you've got your problem in one sentence. You've got your solution in one sentence. So what's your target market in one sentence?
Online course creators.
Okay. Usually I tell people not to use the A word or the E word, but you kind of use them both without using them.
Okay.
Okay. The A word is anyone and the E word is everyone. And you literally said all online course creators. And as soon as you say that, as soon as you're for everyone, you're for no one.
No, I just said online. General. I just said online. But I guess I could say people teaching online who don't know how to market.
Okay, good. It's a little bit more narrow. So the idea is not to be for everyone. So in this process, and you know, we could spend an hour just diving deep on this. It's just top level. So now you've got the problem you solve, you've got your solution, and you've got your market all tightened up. What this does is it now helps you to put you into this box. Now, mathematically, we can combine all those three sentences into one sentence, which is the one part of the 313. Because if you know the problem and you know your solution and you have your market, you can actually say all of those in one sentence. I solve this problem for these people and here's how I do it. Or for these people who have this problem, here's how I do it. You have six different ways to combine that, which is kind of cool. Then the three words is using metaphor and analogy. So if you were a type of car, like what would it be? Or if you were a hotel or if you were a superhero, tapping into what people already know. You know, maybe what would you be if you're helping? You're like fertilizer for online courses, right?
Good one.
Okay, so like you laugh, but in that instant, you think of fertilizer, you think of this, and it helps to grow, and it helps to create, you're tapping into what people already know to sort of create in their own mind what you do in terms of like things that they know. So that would be kind of funny and creative. Like, yeah, I'm kind of like the fertilizer for your online class. People get it.
Right.
Okay? So working through that process, now we sort of put you into these boxes. And then we start to work on your vision. This is where people forget to spend the right time. The vision is the first part of the four V's, and it's where do you want to go? Because so many people have no idea where they want to go, which means they'll never get there. So what is your vision? Like what happens in 10 years? Right now you're talking about sort of growing a business, but what does it mean? Where do you end up? Where does Tom, when he reaches his tropical island or whatever that would be?
Tropical island?
Where do you want to be? Like where is your vision? Where do you want to go with what you're doing?
Yeah, I've actually been thinking about this. And the few thoughts I've had, I haven't seen any online course conferences going on, which is strange, you know, because there's one for everything. So I would want to run one of those. I'm still contemplating, but I would want to run one of those. And I've looked at some of the business models of that I've seen work really well, either for me or other people. And I feel like I should have something that's recurring, low to mid range, as well as obviously some high level stuff. But the main thing is to do more and work less, right? And that's done by leverage.
Okay. Sure. Okay. So now that we know where you're going as part of this vision, I have this concept called the branding starship. And now that you know where your destination is, you would do what I call an asteroid audit. Now, we all have a certain amount of time during the day. That's the one thing that we all share. So what I would challenge you to do is write down all of the different things that you are investing your time in. Mm-hmm. Those are asteroids. So if you go to the gym, or if you watch TV, or if you're working out, or if you're, you know, doing SEO, once you first establish and identify that, you can then ask yourself, is this asteroid that I'm spending my time on, is this helping to get me closer to my goal, or is it helping, is it distracting me from my goal? Because a lot of times people will say, I just don't have the time, when in actuality, they have the same amount of time as everybody else. They're just investing it in things that are not getting them towards where they're going. So doing an actual asteroid audit and finding where are you spending your time now and asking yourself, is this helping me or hurting me? And what you start to need to do is remove your time investment in the things that are not getting you towards this vision. And a good barometer for that, which I teach people, is if you have an opportunity that pops up, you ask yourself two questions. Is this on brand, and is this making me money? If the answer is yes to both of them, there's a good chance you should do it. If it's no to both of them, you should not do it. If it's yes to one and no to the other, you should consider it and weigh the options. Because at the end of the day, if you're not investing your time in the activities that will get you closer to your goal, then you'll just continue to spin around in space. You'll never get where you want to go. And it's amazing how many people want to have a successful business, but don't know where that ends up from a lifestyle or from an actual practical application.
Yeah, that's the one thing I've been pretty good at, just because of all the experience I've had, and I've made so many mistakes before. So I get that. I definitely get hard work, the asteroids, the doing three things per day, you know, just, I get all that. Yeah.
Okay, good. So another exercise I have people do is what I call drafting. So I want you to think of, just on the spot, you can always change this later, what are three people who are out there in the world that are emulating the type of success that you want, emulating the type of values, emulating the type of lifestyle, brand, expertise that you respect and that you would want to be associated with? What are three people out there that essentially you could draft off of? Like, if you could have a race car and be behind them, who would those people be?
One would be James Framco.
Okay.
When it comes to the work, when it comes to the power and the message, you know, Anthony Robbins and like Eben Pagan, both are really good. Anthony works a little too much. Like, that's not my work less thing. But,
right.
But you know what I mean.
Yep. Okay. So you've got three people there. You don't have to reinvent the wheel, but there's different elements of those three individuals that you aspire to be. So find out what platforms that they're on. Find out what type of content they create. Find out what type of stages that they speak on. Find out the type of questions that they ask on social media. Start to follow and engage with that content, and it gives you a barometer of some of the type of things that are working for somebody who's doing something that you want to end up being like.
Yeah,
because sometimes people don't know where to start. But if you literally draft off of a combination of people that you respect and that already have success, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. But you're taking these elements of what you like about them, and it gives you a foundation of a direction to go in.
Yeah, that's the one thing which I heard of, you know, over lunch yesterday from the business guy. He started getting on social media about a year ago, and he's getting clients or getting more attention from it. But that's what he said. Just emulate the few people that you really follow. Don't copy, but just emulate, you know.
Yeah, emulate. You take the best of you learn, because they've failed 100 times to find out what works for them. Okay. Also, the people who follow Anthony Robbins and these other two people, you can very easily find out who those people are. You go onto Twitter and you see who's following them. Those are people that you should follow, that you should connect with. Those are the people that are your potential clients as well. So it gives you a bit of direction. So within the vision, you got to know where you're going. You got to draft. And there's one more exercise that we have, which is a post-it note exercise. And again, I could spend an hour on this, but this is very high level, okay?
Yeah.
Take two colors of post-it notes, one that you write on individual post-it notes what you want to be known for. I want to be known as funny. I want to be known as an online marketer. I want to be known as a digital strategist. I want to be known as a sailor. And then you take the other post-it notes and you pass them out to your friends, family, colleagues. You can do this digitally, right? Everything can be done digitally. But the idea is anonymity. So you write down what you want to be known for. And then you get a poll, like ask everybody, What would you describe me as? What do you think about me as? Then you take these two different post-it notes and you put them all up on a wall, and you'll see different clusters. Groupings will happen with both colors of post-it notes. Groupings will happen with individual colors of post-it notes, and then there will be outliers. Get rid of the outliers. Get rid of all the post-it notes that are the same colors clumped together. What you're left with are clusters of post-it notes that have both traits that you want to be known for and that people already know you for. Hmm. And the trick is to choose three of those clusters. Now, here's why that's so important. Your brand is not what you want to be known for. Your brand is not what other people think about you. Your brand is the intersection between what you want to be known for and what people think of you already. And the value in this is that people already know who you are. They know you, but they have different thoughts about who you are. And when you are able to identify where they connect and then you own it, you can help people to describe you in a way that you want to be known for, because they already know you for that. Because it's a lot easier to convince somebody of something that they already know than it is to convince them of something that they don't know. And so as a starting point, if you look to the people that know you, you can take what you want to be known for and what you're known for, and you now have the power to find the top three things that people already know you for that you can latch on to. Because you have a brand, now you can take control of it.
That's really powerful.
It is very, very cool. You can actually go to influencetree.com/post-it, and we've got a video that steps you through that. But that's amazing. And what it also does, if you're just deciding to start your branding process, your friends, your family, and your loved ones, you're bringing them into that process. You're saying, look, I'm getting ready to like work on my personal brand, but I want to know what you think about me first, because a personal brand isn't just like, ta-da, I'm here. It's actually who you are. And in a general sense, the mistake that people make is, you know, we talked about drafting. It's not like you're just trying to be a carbon copy of Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins is Tony Robbins. And what happens is people think, oh, I need to be a brand, so I need to be professional, and I need to look and smell and post like everybody else. But guess what? All those people look the exact same. The one true differentiation, the thing that makes you you, is you. It's that you're human. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly, all these things that have happened to you. And in our book that's coming out, Leonard and I are writing, it's called Ditch the Act. Mm. Because people connect with people. People don't want to follow corporate brands. They want to follow people. Some of my most popular tweets are when I'm most vulnerable. I was about to give a keynote. I had a big old pimple on my forehead, and I was so nervous about it. It was 30 minutes before the show, and I didn't know whether I should pop it or not. And I literally tweeted a picture of it. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm freaking out. Do I pop it or not? The whole thing blew up. It almost broke the internet. There was like team pop it, team not. Like everybody just came to my aid. They're like, this happens all the time. Everybody's like, use concealer, do it. Like everybody was involved in the conversation because I'm human.
Yeah.
And so you're really using what you want to be known for in combination with what people already know you about. And that's really where it locks in the vision. Okay. So you have the vision. Then it's about the voice. And this one's important because we tend to think, okay, I got to make videos, I got to write, I got to do images, I got to do all this stuff. No. Find out what your voice is. What do you like to do? Do you like to write? Do you like to be on camera? Do you like to draw? Do you like to take pictures? Figure out first from a talent discovery process, what are you good at? What do you enjoy doing? And then focus on doing that. If you love being in front of the camera, make videos. But if you hate writing, don't blog. Like it's that simple. So first, it's a talent discovery. Find out what is the best vehicle for your voice. That's really important. And then when you're doing all this work, because it is work, you're enjoying it and you're good at it. You know, there's a lot of research around your strengths. And it's better to build on your strengths than to try to fix your weaknesses. So find out your strengths and how you're communicating your voice.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because it seems like the whole social media is getting pushed into video. You know, and that's with Facebook making video ads cheaper, and
yeah,
and, you know, it's sort of like we're all getting pushed into it, whether we like it or not.
But if you're not comfortable with video, you're not going to make good videos, right? So I would say that the importance of discovering your own talent and chasing those talents down is a great starting point. Now, if you are a talented writer, there's programs, I think it's called Luminen or something like that. You can take a blog and artificial intelligence will read it, take the good snippets out of it, find images that are royalty free, and you can make a video out of your blog without ever being in front of the camera. So there are ways around that to push into it. But video is powerful. It's engaging. People are lazy. They don't want to read. They want something instantaneous. And sometimes video will outperform everything for a reason, because it's the least amount of effort that the viewer has to put in order to get the information.
Let me ask you this too, because it's something I've been really contemplating. You know, building a business around a personal brand is fine, right? It's great. We sort of have to do that in a lot of ways. But how do you do that without making the business unsellable? You know, because if you only build the business around your personal brand, you can't exit. And I'm not saying
I'm not saying you should exit,
but just having that possibility, you know, not to just to leave that door open.
Yeah, so Neil Patel talks about this and actually recently had a post that really hit this on the head. It's that, like, his name, Neil Patel, the Neil Patel brand has become bigger than his companies. Now, that's somewhat of an extreme example, but it's right to your point. And my belief is that having a personal brand will help you to grow your business. But for me, like, RyanFolan.com is my brand. But it gives me the power to direct people to Influence Tree. It gives me the power to direct people somewhere else. And so I look at it as the personal brand is sort of at the top of the top, allowing you to funnel and direct people downward. So you can use your personal brand to push and build a company that is sellable. Influence Tree is Influence Tree. Ryan Folan is Ryan Folan. And I make this analogy. Have you ever completely lost a hard drive or had your laptop stolen or your iPad totally erased or anything like that?
Oh, yeah.
That is very analogous to not building a brand, because if you put the company first and then all of a sudden something goes wrong and the company fails or you sell the company or whatever, that's gone. You're now starting from scratch. All of you, like, it's erased. It's like if you're an employee at a company for 10 years and then all of a sudden you're fired or you leave and you don't have your computer, you don't have your contacts, you don't have your access, you don't have anything. So a personal brand is almost like an insurance policy that allows you to not lose the traction that you have while still being realistic that most companies fail and it might take a couple tries at it. You can't put all of your eggs into your first startup. So I think that using a personal brand to build your business is the right combination. And if you do it correctly and your brand becomes so strong, well, sure, that if your brand is that strong, then you're going to be making money off that brand regardless, and it can only help to monetize one of your startups, right? It gives that startup that credibility. So I would say that a brand is like an insurance policy so that you essentially protect the traction and the successes that you build under your name. But you can leverage that as influence to push people to different directions that you want to send them to your businesses.
Ryan, this has been great. I really appreciate you coming in. I appreciate the coaching session. Where can people find you?
RyanFolan.com, as we're talking about that. And then if you want to find out more about the business, it's InfluenceTree.com. And so let me finish off the four V's within like two sentences, because you have your vision, you have your voice. The next is volume. Volume means taking the content that you create and syndicating it everywhere. Mm. It's not about creating 100 articles. It's about creating one article and spreading it 100 times. And the fourth V is what we call validation. This is when you start to get recognized as an expert. This is when media starts to contact you. This is when you get featured in publications, and then you get published in other publications, and then people want you to write a book, and then all of a sudden people are inbound requesting your time. That doesn't happen immediately. It happens after you've established your vision, you've established your voice, you are with an extreme amount of volume getting your name and everything out there, and then the validation comes as a result. So position first, and then work through those four V's And it's an equation that will help you do what you're doing. You're doing the right stuff, but just maybe not in the right order.
Before you go, let me know if you enjoyed this interview. Leave a review, subscribe, join the Smart Brand Marketing Facebook page, whatever is easiest. Also, if you need my help marketing your online course, or know that your business could use some SEO, come to smartbrandmarketing.com, check out the case studies, and reach out to me. Once again, smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.